We're actually starting on verse 20 in chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita. But I thought I wanted to give this morning kind of an overview. I want to do an unfoldment about, in reference to meditation itself today, for this class, and then we'll have satsang at 11 o'clock my time, right, which would be 8:30 your time. Okay. So we'll start with just an unfoldment of Nididhyasana and its relationship to the teaching. Okay.
Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastu, Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
This chapter 6 that we're doing, we've already done the first 19 verses, but I don't really expect you to remember those verses. It'd be good if, using the Gita Home Study, you might read through them. At least read through the verses, even if you don't have time to study the Swamiji's commentary. It's still good to just refresh yourself on the verses, and then we'll start with verse 20 tomorrow. But now I want to give an overview, and as I'm thinking about what to say in reference to this understanding of Nididhyasana, of meditation from a Vedantic standpoint, I'm just recognizing how essential it is, because honestly, not understanding Nididhyasana, what it actually is, what we mean by meditation, without having a firm, clear understanding of it, I feel that it can actually stop you from getting this vision. That's how critical it is. And why I say that is because most of us, though many of you have been studying Vedanta for a long time, but I think looking at it this way will be useful for you as teachers. When we think of meditation or the practice of meditation, we are thinking about gaining an experience of the self, capital S self, through the process of meditation. The problem with that is that, in reference to me, just as a jiva, this body, mind, sense organs, and even through the use of my mind, I am always concentrating on, looking at, experiencing something which I'm objectifying, where I am experiencing something other than myself. And so in meditation, this relationship with our vrittis, our thought modifications, which is a subject-object relationship, is turned inward. But then I'm also, again, looking inward. I'm looking. I'm meditating upon something. And when that's the situation, just as for a person who doesn't have self-knowledge, I myself, the buddhi, the mind, becomes the meditator upon the self. And so now, again, the self, my being, is hidden in the buddhi. It's hidden in the mind. It's superimposed, in a sense, as is the case when you don't have self-knowledge. This me, your sense of me, is taken to by the buddhi. It's taken by the buddhi, by your mind, your intellect. I guess all of you know these terms by now. The buddhi takes itself to be you. This is what we call anyonya adhyasa. This is what we mean by mutual superimposition, where the buddhi takes itself to be the conscious being, and so then it becomes, the buddhi takes itself to be the conscious being, and then the conscious being, the me, gains all of the qualities of the buddhi, in fact, all of the qualities of anything, any vritti in the mind, that we call a upadhi. It'll take on all of the qualities of the body. The body is taken to be me, then I take on all of the qualities of the body. Not I, not myself, but starting just with the buddhi itself, I want to make this clear. The buddhi, without self-knowledge, superimposes the me experience, this me, this very personal experience of me, which is ever-present me. The problem is not that the self-experience is not there, that I'm not here. I'm very much here. This conscious being that is labeled just in our language as me, I am completely 100% present. I am never not present. I am never not covered, like putting a bag over something, it covers it. Or turning out the lights, it covers it, the darkness covers it. But here, your self-experience is never at any time covered. It's not covered by the buddhi, it is not covered by the body, it is not covered by your emotions, it's not covered by your vrittis. It is simply not covered. It is completely, fully, 100% present at all times. Yourself is timeless. It's free from time, actually. It's not like your me experience is coming and going. It's never coming and going. I am always here. No matter what I'm thinking, no matter what I'm feeling, no matter what I'm looking at, no matter how old I am or how young I am, no matter whether my sense organs are working or not working, I am here. Try to think of a time when you are not here. So the problem of this me being present or absent or sometimes gone is not our problem. And yet, in terms of meditation, this is very much our problem. Because I'm not meditating on me. I am meditating on the self. I am trying to have an experience of the self. And so then I have all kinds of notions about what that experience should be like. And so my mind, even when the pramana is working initially, I'm looking for a particular type of vritti, or I'm looking for a particular type of experience, or I am looking for a mental absorption. Let me do pranayama. Let me do japa, the repetition of a mantra. Let me do just simple deep breathing. Let me relax my body. Let me try to relax my mind. I am working for a vritti, a certain type of condition, which will allow the self to be known. So I'm working for the experience of myself. I hope this makes sense. And it's not that many of you, I think, understand this, but you'll be saying it over and over again for your lifetime because it's completely essential to the understanding of Vedanta and for gaining this knowledge. So the problem in terms of our idea of Nididhyasana is we are looking for an experience that is already here. How can we look for an experience which is already here? And that's the problem with any understanding of meditation. I'm trying to meditate on myself. And usually the concept with that is that I want to have an experience of myself. So in the best of possible worlds, what I'm really looking for is the experience of a shantavritti. A shantavritti means a vritti whose nature enjoys great resonance with my own me experience. In the sense that there's shanti, there's Ananda, from the standpoint of the vritti, there's fullness, a deep sense of happiness. I mean, a real shanta vritti where your mind has become so peaceful, so calm. It's like an absolutely clean, clear mirror. And so that clean, clear mirror, as though a reflection of myself. And so it experiences great depth, great ananda, great peace. And so I feel like I'm getting somewhere when I have a deep shanta vritti. I feel like I'm having an experience of myself. And so I'm getting somewhere. In terms of my knowledge, I'm having an experience of myself in this shanta vritti. And so now what happens is that I'm going to be meditating for the shanta vritti. I want another shanta vritti. Why do I say that? Because that shanta vritti, that peaceful, deep, quiet, absorbed vritti, comes and goes. You're not walking around all of the time, Swamiji, and the greatest Mahatma that you can imagine is not walking around all the time with a shanta vritti. And so if I take the shanta vritti to be myself, because it is such depth of silence and ananda, it's a sat, it has chit, it is consciousness, it is ananda, it is fullness, but it comes and goes. I've often joked in when teaching that I used to ask Swamiji, as did many of us, I would say something like, Swamiji, you know, I know myself. I know myself, Swamiji. But when will it stay? When will it stay, Swamiji? that means definitely I don't know myself. I know a shanta vritti. I know a shanta vritti. And so this becomes kind of a trap for us, because we're actually not gaining self-knowledge. We're gaining a shanta vritti and taking the shanta vritti to be me. But if the shanta vritti was me, it couldn't go away. I don't go away. I never go away. I am the one who is ever present no matter what the vritti is. So there's nothing wrong with a shanta vritti. Shanta vritti is beautiful. But if I'm meditating for a shanta vritti, or I'm meditating for a deep absorption, a deep, profound absorption, maybe I'm meditating for a samadhi experience, a non-dual nirvikalpa samadhi experience. And at that time, there is no subject-object, there is nothing but my own presence. And I think now, I'm successful. I have had a nirvikalpa, a non-dual samadhi experience where there's a complete resolution between the subject and the object, between my own being and the perception of anything else. It is only me. And that is such a wonderful thing. And so when I get back, of course, unfortunately, or fortunately, that nirvikalpa samadhi state, where there is no experience of duality, which when I come back from it, the mind comes back, and then here I am embodied, and I have a memory of that nirvikalpa samadhi experience. And what happens when I come back is I can say something like, I had a nirvikalpa samadhi experience of myself. I know that's who I am. I know that's who I am. How can I get that again? How can I get that again? I have to try to get another nirvikalpa samadhi state again. So now it becomes like Swamiji will joke and say that Nirvikalpa Samadhi experience becomes like the best cup of coffee. You know, Madras coffee is so... Madras... that the Madras coffee is so important. And everybody has, you know, their best, the very best cup of coffee. Well, you can't have a better meditative experience than Nirvikalpa Samadhi. And somehow you know it is your... It is you. It is you. But when you come back from that experience, the me that is totally identified with the mind, with the buddhi, thinks, the buddhi, enjoying this little me, thinks, I need to have that again. I need to have that again. I need to have that again. If you need to have it again, then obviously it's not you. You see what I mean? You're already here. So if you need to have it again, you fall into the trap of being this little self, this little me, that needs to have an experience of the big me, the real me. And then, of course, whenever the mind comes back, I'm back to the little me. Because the ajnanam, the ignorance in reference to my buddhi as me, is still very much in place. So, the nididhyasana, or any form of meditation in the Vedanta, in terms of the Vedanta, has its benefit. It has its benefits for calming the mind and giving the mind more experience of shanti, that type of thing. But it's still very much in samsara because shanti comes and goes. Nirvikalpa samadhi comes and goes. So you haven't the nididhyasana, I'm not going to call it really nididhyasana, but because nididhyasana is a word that we use for Vedanta, in Vedanta. So these meditative experiences, shantavrittis, all are nice within the world. They're very nice within the world. You know, very gives you a lot of peace. You learn how to calm your mind in this. It's very, very good. But I could say like this. Dharma is very good. The practice of Dharma in the world is very good. Because it gives you an ongoing shanti. So to the degree that I practice Dharma, or I could say kindness or ahimsa, live up to my values, the value of values, the more relative shanti I have. That is very beautiful. And adharma, the practice of any kind of adharma, is very painful. It creates a lot of agitation in the mind. But is the atma, is yourself present to the mind that is enjoying dharma or shanti? I would say, well, yes, I'm here. And I have to say, is yourself present to the mind that is agitated because of adharma? Are you present to your agitated mind? And are you present to your calm mind? Is your being present to the dharmic mind? Yes, I am here. Is your being present to the adharmic mind, the agitated or the hurt mind? Well, yes, I am hurt, right? I am happy, I am hurt, I am adharmic. I am here present to all of them. In fact, to whatever experience, what if I say, to every experience that you have, are you present? Is this me experience, the me that makes you you, are you present? Even if you go back to when you're a little girl or little boy, were you there at that time? Of course. When I was a little girl, I was there. That was the me, who I am was there. Is there any time, is there any experience, is there any vritti, is there any emotion that you can have, any vritti that you can have where you are not there? You have to say no. You probably, if you have older, if you had ever conversation with your older parents, I remember with my mom when she was in her almost 80. She said, I can't believe when I look in the mirror how I look. With all these wrinkles and everything. It's not me. I'm still the same one that I was when I was a little girl. But when I look in the mirror, I think, who is that? Who is that? Because I'm the same person. I'm the same person. We've all had that experience. I am the same person. You don't think when you have a dukkha vritti, a suffering, you don't think. You don't think you're not there. You have nirvikalpa samadhi, you don't think you're not there. You just think that big capital self is gone. But you are always there. Always. That one who is always here is the one that has to be recognized. Now, how to recognize it? How to recognize yourself, the one who is always here, in reference to the vrittis, all the thought modifications, the moods, the emotions, you know, the changes in my body, the changes in my friendships and my love and my hate and all of the things that can happen in life. How to recognize me amidst all of this change? Me, the one who is constant. This is something, it's just so down to earth. You know that this knowledge is too simple. I said that once at the very beginning when I was with Swamiji, and I said somehow he made me have a glimpse at this because I was very new to this knowledge. And something he was unfolding, I said, Swamiji, this knowledge is very simple, isn't it? I don't think I really knew what I was talking about, really. But that's what I said. This knowledge is really simple, isn't it, Swamiji? And Swamiji said, that is exactly the problem. We use big words. Nirvikalpa samadhi. You know, Brahman. I am Brahman. I am the very self of Ishvara. These are huge words until they're understood. I am enlightened. I have self-knowledge. I am enlightened. I mean, a word like enlightened, that when I was young, you know, that belongs to, I didn't even know about Vedanta at that time, that belongs to the Buddha or somebody, an enlightened person. They're huge, huge words. And my being me, I would never guess that they're talking about me. And I would never guess that this me, that all of the Upanishads and all of the spiritual teachings really, in one way or another, are trying to point to that. This sense of me. It is the most obvious. There's nothing more obvious. That is part of the problem. It's like they use the example of a fish in water. The fish is not going to notice the water because the water is everywhere. It doesn't stand out as anything. It's the ground of being, in a sense. Wherever it is, the water is there. Same for you in this sense. Wherever you are, you are there. Wherever you are, you are there. Whatever you are thinking, you are there. Whatever you are feeling, you are there. So why should you think about yourself? You're always there. And the buddhi, your experiences, have you covered. Because whatever the vritti is, then that's what I am feeling. That's what I am seeing. That's what I am thinking. You see the problem? There's what we call an anyonya adhyasa that's taking place. So say even for your buddhi, your buddhi has a thought, then that I am totally pervasive and present to that thought. So it is my thought. That's what the buddhi says. What does yourself say? Nothing. Is the me going around chattering? What if yourself, this innermost being, the sense of me, was always talking away, always chattering? Then you've got your buddhi, which is trying to think or trying to do this or that, having this vritti and that vritti, but underneath, this me is babbling away, making noise, interrupting things. No. You never interrupt anything. Never you interrupt anything. You don't talk. What if the self, what if the buddhi using the sense organs is having the vritti, in your mind using your sense organs is having a perception? Like right now I'm looking, you can't see it, but I'm looking out my window. And so it's a beautiful scene. I'm looking into the kind of this country scene. And I'm enjoying that scene. Okay, but the self, myself, you know, is doing something else. It's not doing anything else. It's not doing anything. It is always there as me. All yourself is doing is being me. Just being me. Why do I use the word me? Because that's in our language, we say this. I am here. I am. Who is? Me. I am. I am here. Who is here? Me. Who is thinking? Me. Me. This word me is very important. Because listen to this. If I say, are you thinking about something right now? Oh, yes, I am thinking. I am thinking. That I is me. So what if I said, who is thinking? I am thinking. I. Who is that I? Who is that I who is thinking? That I, that is me. Now, what we're going to be doing a lot in Nitta Dhyasana and our meditations is meditate actually on this me experience. To differentiate me, this word me that lands upon yourself, to differentiate this me, the me experience, what makes me me. Just imagine just meditating on me, just the me experience. And meditating on the me experience from all different standpoints. In fact, you know, when we talk about doing a walking or open eye meditation, where, so listen to the language, you are taking a walk. Well, actually, my body is taking a walk. My body is walking. You are seeing this beautiful vista, yes, through my eyes. I am having a vritti of this beautiful vista. Through my body, my legs moving, I am taking a walk. There is a very natural, total superimposition between you, who you are, and what the body is doing, what the sense organs are doing, what the mind is doing, what the emotions are doing. There is a natural superimposition born of beginningless ignorance, which allows this me, which is completely present as me, not a different me, not a meditative me, not a nirvikalpa samadhi me, just simple me. This simple me is the one invariable in my experience. It is the one invariable that I can never negate. I can never change. If I have a mood that is very unhappy, an unhappy emotion, I am there. It is my emotion, me. If I have a very happy emotion, I am there, me. Any experience I have, any perception I have, I am there. Any thought, any memory, any meditative experience, I am there. So the problem, our problem, has nothing to do really with having the me experience, having the experience of myself. I am the constant. I am never not there. So that isn't our problem. So we don't have to meditate in order to gain the me experience. That's already completely, I'm already completely completely present as me. That's not the problem. The problem is, because of beginningless ignorance, there is no viveka, there's no discrimination at all. Until there is no discrimination at all between this me experience and any and every vritti. Whether the vritti, the thought modification, be of the buddhi, whether it be of the emotions, whether it be of the memories, whether they be meditative experiences, whether they be through the perceptions, the sense organs, dream, deep sleep, whatever the vritti, whatever the experience is, there is no viveka, no discrimination between the adhishtana, the ground, the truth, the non-dual being, the me of that experience. So the experience and me are totally living together as one entity. Kind of like the red hot iron ball. If you have a red hot iron ball and you've never seen iron and you've never seen fire, you're just seeing a red hot iron ball. So like that, between my buddhi, say, a buddhi vritti, my mind, and me, I'm a red hot iron ball. The buddhi is the conscious being. The conscious being takes on whatever vrittis are there. It doesn't take it on, actually. It's not doing anything. But your buddhi, because of ignorance, is taking on this superimposition. And so now, what we call nididhyasana for the Vedanta is what? The nididhyasana, as just a simple meditation, taking away the shravana and manana, taking away the teaching methodology, is just going to be simple meditation where I'm meditating for an experience. I'm meditating for an experience of the self, but I don't know what the self is. So I'm meditating for a self experience. When I come back from that meditation, I say, oh, I had quite a bit of absorption. I had quite a bit of absorption in that meditation. Or I think I experienced myself in that meditation. But now it's gone, and I have to get that back. That's a jnanam. That is totally self. That's meditation within the world of self-ignorance. So what has to happen for us to have the word meditation to mean nididhyasana? The shravana manana nididhyasana. That means that this knowledge itself, at the time of teaching, through the use of the pramana, the very means of knowledge that makes the Vedanta, that nididhyasana follows shravana. Shravana is the teaching prakriyas, the teaching methodologies that are used to take you step by step by step to the differentiation, to a differentiation of yourself from every vritti. Let me put it like this. A vritti, what is a vritti? A vritti is a thought modification. Right? A vritti is a thought modification of any kind. It can be a perceptual, it could be an emotion, it could be sensory born, it could be a meditative experience, it can be a memory. Whatever my mind is capable of doing, that mental thought, that mental cognition of whatever it is, from emotion to perception, whatever it is, in meditative experiences, it's a cognition of sorts. Infinite variety of cognitions. Your being, me, needs to be differentiated from those cognitions, from those thoughts. Any mental activity is called a vritti. The vritti, because of the sattva, we'll get into that later, but because it reflects as though consciousness, it manifests consciousness, it naturally takes itself to be me. Every vritti. You are experiencing yourself through the lens of the vritti. And your self-experience is always there as though pervading the vritti. Well, these words pervasion are problematic, but we'll get into it as we go on. You're always being with the vritti. The one who's talking about you is the vritti. You need to be differentiated from the vritti so you can realize, recognize yourself in your own right and recognize that the vrittis are coming and going, not ever touching you in any way. The vrittis are satyam, that you are satyam, the vrittis are mitya. You never change. The me never changes. That is what needs to be recognized at the time of teaching through the use of these prakriyas, these teaching methodologies. You see it over and over and over again from many, many different ways. Nididhyasana is what then? Nididhyasana is not performing that viveka for you. Because with nididhyasana, any type of meditation, the ahankara, the I notion, is already totally committed to the identity between the self and the vritti. It's totally committed. It doesn't have any doubt about that. So I am meditating upon the self. And of course, without even thinking about the self, I'm meditating is different from me, the meditator. That's how, within the realm of ajnanam, of self-ignorance, that's how we meditate. So what is nididhyasana? Nididhyasana is sitting the mind that has knowledge, the buddhi which has knowledge, has clarity to a good enough clarity, to be able to sit with the self that is recognized at the time of teaching. My buddhi is able to recognize its own mityatva. It is able to differentiate my being, my changeless me, from itself, whatever it is doing. And then, by doing this nididhyasana, sometimes Swamiji is called nididhyasana as kind of a slowed down shravana. Because what you have received at the time of teaching, you are now sitting with the fact of it. Because at the time of teaching, hopefully, when the Vedanta is being used as a pramana, as a prakriya, then what happens? Over and over you are seeing, you have moments of real recognition. And those moments of recognition, of differentiation between the me that is totally present to every thought, every emotion I have, becomes much more available. That viveka, that discrimination, becomes more and more available to the buddhi. To the extent that as I sit with myself, once I recognize myself, and then I sit with myself, I more and more recognize I am always here. Not I superimposed upon the buddhi. I, this very innermost being, that is the me experience, that is me. I recognize my own pure presence as being the very adhishtana, the very changeless, non-dual truth of every thought, of every emotion, of every experience that I have. And so in nididhyasana, that I give my mind, my buddhi, a chance to be with me, a chance to get to know me, as opposed to the buddhi taking itself to be me. Even all of your painful emotions, as well as the happy emotions, beautiful, beautiful, important time to do Nitya Dhyasana. Because what do I recognize? That all of these emotions are with me. I am not the emotions. I am the Adhishtana, the changeless me, that becomes a sanctuary, a refuge for all emotions, all feelings, all vrittis. I am the sanctuary because I never change. And I am what I seek. It wouldn't be very satisfying to recognize I am the changeless self, pure existence, just like space. You say, well, I don't want to be space. I don't want to be changeless space. What good is that? You know? No, that's not who you are. You, in fact, are what all beings seek, including yourself. Yourself being your mind, your buddhi. What do you seek, really? The way I like to say it, because these words work, deeply work for me. Every being wants to be loved. I want to feel I am loved. Any fun or joy or happiness and all that, and you don't feel that you are loved, it's just not good enough. But that being loved is so precious. It is so precious. And it is so painful to lose that feeling or to be away from that feeling of being loved, that we do all kinds of things to distract ourselves from any sense of absence of that feeling. I am loved. What is the source of this being loved feeling? Feeling, a feeling, is it just a feeling that I'm always seeking? I have many names for it. I want to be happy. I want to be satisfied. I want to be full. I want to be complete. These are all just some types of synonyms. That's all true, but what if you say like this, I want to be loved. So say we're running around the universe trying to be loved by this person and that person. We all get our dogs and cats because they love us. Definitely. If you have an animal, you're taken care of. They love you. They love you unconditionally. You have a little child also until they become teenagers. They love you so much. I remember when one of my nieces, just this is a little sweet aside, I remember one of my nieces, when some my nieces and nephews were growing up, and one nephew had become a teenager. He was just a wonderful little boy. But when he became like, you know, 15, 16, oh, wow. And I remember this sweet little niece, she said to her mother, Mommy, I will never do that to you, Mommy. I'll never do that to you. I would never treat you that way. I would never be that mean. He is so mean. I love you, Mommy, so much. And you know, my sister enjoyed, I've got quite a big family. So my sister thought that was the sweetest thing, and she thought to herself, how many years, more years do I have of that? How many more years will I get to enjoy that, you know? Because it is so precious. So we have things in the world that help us to have that feeling, but really, what is the source? What is the source of the feeling? Where does it come from? It seemingly comes and goes. The nature of yourself, the Atma, your being, is that feeling, but it's not a feeling. The feelings require vrittis, shanta vrittis of different sorts. But hidden inside every vritti is me. And as my buddhi starts to be able to just be with me, more and more you recognize that the swarupa, the nature of your own self, of your being, is that feeling of being loved without a lover. Just simple, non-dual, being loved, very simple, very pure, ever-present, but of course competing with an agitated mind, competing with hurts and pains, all of this type of what we call competition, you know, coming and so coming and going. But when I gain this knowledge and I learn to be with myself, get to know myself, the buddhi's refuge is me because I'm always there. What is my refuge? It is that ananda swarupa of my being. And it's not competing with all of these other vrittis. And so I sit with myself. I get to know myself. I get used to myself. Instead of the buddhi being me, I get the buddhi gets used to being with me at all times because I am always here. The emotions get used to being with me instead of being me through the buddhi, as we'll see. So Nididhyasana provides time. It gives me the time to be with the self that I've differentiated through the use of all of these Vedanta Pramanas, all of the Vedanta Prakriyas, these teaching methodologies. Take me to the recognition of my being, and Nididhyasana allows me to spend time single-pointedly just being with myself until it's totally used to it. Gives me a chance to get used to being, to be me, really. The buddhi recognizing me as me. That is self-knowledge. That is what it is. Nididhyasana takes care of the obstructions in the mind that cause me not to be able to be with that. So we'll have to see that in depth. These verses from verse 20 on are really very grounding, very beautiful, very grounding verses in reference to owning this knowledge. So, that's it.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Harihi Om.